Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast, brought to you by SeatGeek. Download the mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets and use the promo code LOCLIPPERS to get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. For today's show, I had a conversation with Josh Lloyd of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, where we discuss the outlook for all the Clippers this season, who's going to make a leap for the Clippers, who can we expect to regress a little bit. We also talked a lot about Paul Pierce, the small forward position, surprise, surprise, and just basically discussed everything you need to know about the Clippers and fantasy basketball all in one podcast. Again, we're going to jump you right into the conversation with Josh Lloyd. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, brought to you by Fantrax and Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. I do suggest that you do that. You can keep up to date with any of the shows that we're doing here, any articles that I write, any questions that you might have. You can always throw them my way on Twitter. So go ahead and give me that follow. We're here to talk another of the teams for the season preview series that we've been doing. We're heading across to the West Coast into the Pacific Division, and we're going to be looking at the Los Angeles Clippers and what we can expect from them this season. And to talk to me about everything that involves the Los Angeles Clippers, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Clippers podcast and a writer for Fox Sports, DJ Foster. DJ, it's good to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Now, DJ, as I mentioned, you're the host of the Locked On Clippers podcast, one of the many new Locked On podcasts. What have you guys been up to on that podcast recently with some of your latest podcasts?
We've been doing all kinds of kooky stuff this summer.
You have.
We had a Game of Thrones or Summer League character episode, which was pretty interesting, I guess, if you're into Game of Thrones, or if you're completely not into Game of Thrones. If you're in the middle, probably not so interesting. But yeah, we've just been covering all the off-season moves. Kind of just Clippers bringing everybody back, so there wasn't a ton of intrigue, but we covered all the little moves, too.
Yeah, and that's exactly what all these Locked On podcasts do. They get super detailed into all of the teams, whether it's your team, whether it's the team you're just super interested in hearing about. You go and check out these teams, the team podcasts, and they've got all the information about every player on the roster, any moves they might make, any sort of decision. It's great. I listen to all of them. I've got them all a separate playlist on my podcast player of all the Locked On basketball podcasts. And even if you don't want to do that, there's now a Locked On NBA specific feed. You just subscribe to that one feed, and all the NBA shows come through on that one feed. So that's another great way of doing it. DJ, what I'm doing on all of these season preview podcasts is over at Basketball Monster, myself and Kyle and Matt, I've got three questions that we're each asking each other for each team. So what I'm doing, I'm taking those three questions and I'm throwing them towards you, our resident Clippers expert here. So the first question about this team is a trade. Will a trade happen this season? And the question we have here is, will it matter for fantasy? But we can expand on that, saying, will it be a big name, or will it be just a sort of a pissy name at the end of the bench that gets moved?
Right. I would say a trade will happen this season for the Clippers, but I would say it's probably going to trend more towards the not important fantasy category. I think they're going to get a small forward, someone like PJ Tucker or Wilson Chandler, or someone along those lines, who will fill in as kind of a fourth, fifth offensive option for him, and, you know, kind of play a 20 to 25 minute role more likely than not. But yeah, I see a trade happening. I don't see it mattering for fantasy for the Clippers.
So basically, that question was is asked open-endedly without actually mentioning anything, but it's alluding to, do you think Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, or DeAndre Jordan will get traded? And I agree with you. I don't think any of those guys get moved. They didn't. The way the season ended last season was not how the Clippers obviously wanted it to, but it also wasn't in their control. So they're not just, okay, we're just blowing this up and moving on from these guys. Next offseason, different story with free agency approaching for Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Many things can happen, but I'm with you in that same camp. I don't see Griffin being moved. I don't see Paul being moved this season. I think the Clippers have shown a resolute, not even hard-headedness, just they're just going to go ahead with what they got and keep throwing it back out there. And there's definitely reasons you can say that that's the right thing to do, because it could have paid off very well for them last season.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it only takes one time to get lucky with injury stuff, and you never know, a big star could get hurt. That's really the only way I see the Clippers making a trade from their big core, is if one of them suffers like a catastrophic season-ending injury. Like, if Chris Paul blows out his ACL, or Blake Griffin totally, Achilles, something like that, then maybe they say, okay, the window's shut, let's move on, let's get future assets, let's rebuild this thing. But other than that, there's just no reason for him to blow it up right now.
We also know that Doc Rivers is very averse to rebuilding. That's the reason that he left Boston and came to the Clippers, because he didn't want to rebuild. He said, I've done this before, I'm not doing it again. So with him being the GM and the head coach, he's not just going to go ahead and say, oh, you know what, guys, let's move on from some of our superstars and get young assets, because he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to go through a rebuild again. So that's another reason that he's just not going to be looking to do that.
Right.
And when he's got personnel decision control.
Right. And when you're free agents, which Chris Paul and Blake Griffin can be this summer, you're not selling them on draft picks.
Yep.
You're not saying, oh, you get to play with the 7th pick in the draft next year. That's not a selling point for them. They want to play with other stars. So getting rid of any of those guys for young, for draft picks, for young assets, really, really isn't the way to go in free agency for the Clippers.
If you get rid of Chris Paul, then you probably end up losing Blake Griffin and vice versa. So it's not a great way to go about it. Now, you touched on the Clippers' small forward position already. It's been a fantasy black hole for quite a while, and honestly, a real-life black hole for quite a bit of time.
True.
We don't know exactly what they'll do with that position. We'd have to assume that they'll just run back the same starting lineup as last season and put Luke Marmute in there as the starting small forward. They've got Wes Johnson back as well. But is there any way that you can see them doing anything different with how they run that position? Do they give Johnson more minutes, or do they just run that 18 minutes for Marmute, 22 minutes for Wes Johnson, sort of melange of below average players?
Right, the fantasy dark hole. I see them going with a similar path that they did last year. Luke actually performed pretty well, surprisingly well, with the starters, and he makes sense as a guy that can defend and rebound and just do the little things without needing the ball in his hands. So I can't see them really moving on from him as a starter and as like a 20-25 minute player, unless he drastically loses a step defensively, which probably isn't going to happen. So I think they're satisfied with what they have there. I do think eventually at the trade deadline, if a good small forward becomes available, someone that they can plug in and maybe trade Wes Johnson for, like a Wes Johnson and a draft pick to go get to upgrade the small forward, then maybe Luke may move to the bench, but I don't see that happening. We'll continue our conversation with Josh Lloyd in a moment, but I need to tell you about SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for the games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being in the arena for the biggest players of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for a great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, and I personally have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's just by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and boom, with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for any upcoming game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket, because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's all you got to do. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LOCLIPPERS. That's LOCLIPPERS. And SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LOCLIPPERS today. All right, back to the conversation with Josh Lloyd.
Guarding Pierce at the start from Doc Rivers. We don't know if he's going to play just yet, so I'm not really looking. Look, he's not going to be a fantasy contributor anyway. He barely played last season. When he did play, he was poor. He, in terms of barely played, I mean, he didn't play big minutes. He played games, but he didn't play the full season.
Right.
Obviously, you know, Wes Johnson is far and away the better fantasy option out of those guys. He's a guy that, even if he gets 25 minutes a night, can average a triple one to a three, a steal, and a block per game. But his best position is the four. So he's gonna thrive more if a situation arises where Blake gets injured again, which is not a far-fetched situation given, you know, Blake's injury history over the last couple of seasons. But in the role that we expect from Wes at the moment, in 20, 21 minutes, he's just not going to have enough of an opportunity to rack up enough stats, because he can do it. He just needs that playing time, and Doc is not going to give it to him. Luke Marmute is... he has to be close to being the player who does, in statistic-wise, the least with the most. You could give him 30 minutes and he still wouldn't crack the top 200 in fantasy players. He goes out there. He's almost Tayshaun Prince-like in that sense, from what Prince did last season. Somehow floats around for 20 minutes and doesn't touch the ball, and that's never going to work for fantasy. So even if he's the starter, you need to stay well away, unless your league legitimately rosters 400 players, and that's probably where... where he sits. I'm not even exaggerating.
No, I know.
He does nothing. He's great as a defender, but he just does nothing. And like you, I was surprised at how he played last year, because yeah, he got me cut by the Sixers. Like, that's not a great sign.
Right.
But he filled the role well. Just doesn't fill any sort of role for us fantasy wise. What about Alan Anderson coming across? Is he a guy that's maybe Paul Pierce insurance, despite the fact that he's over 30 himself?
Right. I think that's kind of the thought process behind that signing, was that if Pierce retires, then you still have a veteran who can come in and play a few different spots off the bench, a shooter off the bench. I don't think if Pierce comes back that Pierce is really going to play substantial minutes. Maybe he'll get in there 6-7 minutes a night, maybe. And so I have a hard time seeing Anderson playing a lot either. So you're avoiding all these guys in fantasy, the Clippers small forward, unless you're in like a 40 team league, right?
it's gonna be pretty low. Anderson barely played last season with that ankle problem. We don't even know if he's right from that at this point. You'd have to think that he is, but it's not like he signed a big contract. Even when he came back, he was playing alternate games. He was sitting back to backs. He had minutes restrictions on an injury that kept him out for basically the first 5 months of the season. So he's old, and he was never a great player anyway. So he's going to sit on that bench. And you see, Anderson, Marmute, and Pierce are probably going to be the three worst fantasy contributors on this team, based on just what they do and the sort of minutes they're going to get. So they're not going to have much of an impact whatsoever.
Yeah.
Now, Blake Griffin, I touched on it already. He hasn't been the most durable player. He had the broken hand. We know about the issue there, but that wasn't the real concern last season. It was the torn quad muscle, which kept him out before the broken hand. And then when the hand healed, it was still a problem. Then it limited him in the playoffs, and then it went again, and he couldn't finish off the playoff series. The previous season, he had that weird elbow issue that kept him out for a big chunk of time in the second half of the year. At this point, with Blake getting injured, almost every season it feels like, and him, that's sort of sapping him of some of his athleticism. What happens if he has to miss time again? Because I think it's a pretty fair assumption that he's not going to play the full season.
At this point, yeah, I would think so. I think it's possible that he could play the full season. I wouldn't rule it out, but you're probably not banking on that. And if, you know, injury issues came up again, I think a lot of people would look for Maurice Spates, but I think Doc would fill it more with Brandon Bass at the four. It just seems like Bass can do kind of some of the things that Blake can do, and he's a better defender than Spates, and Spates at the four is a little clunky. So I think Bass as a pick-and-pop guy would come in. You're not really interested in fantasy in Bass, even if Blake Griffin goes down. And Spates would presumably pick up at least a few extra 5-6 minutes. And if you're needing scoring and 3 points, maybe you would look Spates. What do you think?
Bass is a guy that his numbers don't jump off the page to you, but the fact is that if he was getting 28 minutes or so in a place where he replaced Griffin, his percentages are really useful because he's a super efficient shooter from the free throw line, like 80+%. He's a 50+% field goal guy. And you know, getting guys like that off the waiver wire, they just literally don't exist. You can't get guys who will play minutes and then shoot both of those percentages. He's a good rebounder. He'd previously been not a great defensive stats guy, but he did increase his block rate last season. So if there was a situation where Griffin was out and they went with Bass, which is the way I think that they would go, I would grab him just to see how it works out. He's never going to be pushing top 50 or anywhere near Blake's value, but he'd be a solid end-of-the-bench guy who really contributes in those, you know, efficiency stats and helps get your rebounding up and scores decently. But they could also go with Wes Johnson at the four. I like seeing Wes at the four a little bit, but given they've got Bass there, that probably wouldn't be their first point of call. If it was another team, DJ, you'd have to say, hey, they've got a first-round draft pick who's a power forward. Maybe he'd get minutes, but that just doesn't happen with the Clippers, does it?
It sure does not. Didn't even enter my mind that Bryce Johnson would become a starter if Blake Griffin got hurt. It's just not a thing we ever really see. Doc doesn't play his rookies, and then he trades them 2.5 years later.
Yep, so we've got Reggie Bullock, we've got CJ Wilcox, guys that just... I wrote this down somewhere, I should have had it prepared, but that they played like 80 games over 5 seasons combined in the time they were with the Clippers. Just something ludicrously low in terms of their playing time. So Rivers just doesn't give these guys minutes. Now, yeah, he hasn't had high draft picks to work with, and maybe these guys just aren't good, or maybe he just does a bad job of picking them, but he doesn't give them an opportunity. Even Wilcox last season showed a little bit, and now he's been traded so that they could waive Devin Marble. Now he's over in Orlando. Now, Johnson's fantasy game is sky high. It is really, really interesting because, like Bass, big field goal percentage, big free throw percentage, decent shot blocker, good at getting steals, good rebounder, really good scorer. And after his first sort of mental blow up at Summer League, he looked pretty good after that, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He, like you said, all those categories I think he can contribute in, and he's a really good athlete too. So yeah, then and there, he's not going to be overwhelmed by stepping up from the college to the pro. I just don't think we're going to see it. It's just the pattern that's happened throughout, you know, the last years as Doc being the coach of the Clippers. It's just not something that happens. And it's frustrating, too, from a Clippers fan perspective, just because you would think with a core that's locked in, and we kind of know exactly what the Clippers are at this point, there isn't really much of a need for the starters to build that chemistry. The chemistry is already there. They're kind of on autopilot going to the playoffs, so why not trot out Bryce Johnson and give him, you know, 20 minutes a night and see if you can build him into something that you can actually use in the playoffs instead of, you know, just if somebody gets hurt and, nope, there goes the season. It doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, I can't get my head around it either because, you're building on, Bass and Spates, we talked about, who are reliable veterans, but at some point, it's all going to come completely crashing down with this team, and probably won't be this year, but in 2 years' time, there's just going to be absolutely nothing to bring in and no guys to develop or no guys to push in through on value contracts or anything like that. And Johnson's a guy who really, really looks good in terms of a fantasy point of view, and if you're in deep dynasty leagues, he's a guy to look at, but we won't see him on the court for 2 years. We might not ever see him really on the court in a significant role for this team ever, but it could be another team's real gain if he's thrown away in a situation where they need to clear salary. He might be gone in 2 years and then he starts to take off. But he is a name to watch in terms of fantasy. It's just not going to... Maybe Doc proves us all wrong, but I would be stunned if anything changed with Bryce Johnson and the way that Doc uses his rookies this season.
Yep, I agree.
The rest of the NBA draft for the Clippers was unexciting. I thought they made a mistake when they had the opportunity to pick Cheick Diallo at the top of the second round. They traded that onto the Pelicans in exchange for 2 later second round picks, which they then used on David Michener and Diamond Stone. I would much prefer them to see get Diallo in there, but again, Doc's just not going to develop these guys. And I thought he would have been a great fit behind DeAndre Jordan to really start to, you know, in a couple of years' time, you know, take on a significant rotation role, but Doc's just not going to do that. What did you make of A, that trade, and then the two players that Doc picked at pick 39 and 40?
Yeah, I didn't love the trade, especially, you know, taking Michinau, the point guard, French point guard, as we refer to him on the Locked On Clippers podcast. You just re-signed Austin Rivers. You have Chris Paul there. Is it really necessary to take a third point guard in the draft that, you know, you're not going to have stick around, you're not going to bring over, not going to have on the roster? It just seems like kind of a wasted pick. And if we're comparing Diallo and Stone, you obviously want Diallo.
Yeah, exactly. It's not really even close to me the difference between those two guys. The other thing is that we talk about the Clippers having issues on the wing. Patrick McCall was available at that spot,
yep,
at pick 33. They could have grabbed him there. Now, he went one spot before pick 39, but he's a guy that's, I would say, he's going to have an impact this season already with the Warriors, given what they've lost across the wings. It won't be a huge impact, but he could have had a similar impact with the Clippers. Now, Michinau, maybe you thought, oh, I'll trade down, we'll get this guy, but nothing positive has really come out about Michinau before the draft process. He didn't look great at Summer League. He had some okay moments, but he didn't look superb. Like, what did you see from him in Orlando that made you think, oh, maybe this guy comes across and does something?
I didn't see a whole lot. I didn't see a whole lot that makes me think that he's going to be an NBA starter one day. Let's put it that way. Maybe a rotation player, but otherwise, no.
And Diamond Stone, the center from Maryland, Diallo to me is a much better prospect. Now, he's not terrible, Stone. I think he can work into something, but again, he's just not going to see time with this team. He's just not going to. If Bryce Johnson's not playing, Diamond Stone's not playing. But,
right,
you know, does he ever project into an NBA usable big?
He's a little tougher because at least he has size and some offensive skill. Pretty much the rest of his game is lacking. Any other area you can think of, especially defensively, in terms of effort, consistent effort. But at least he has size and skill, so maybe you can mold him into something down the road. So I like that pick better than pick 39.
Yeah, it is a much better pick than the Michinau pick. But yeah, Stone's another guy who's a pretty efficient big man as well, pretty decent free throw shooter, not a bad scorer. Not a bad shot blocker, but still has a lot to work on in lots of areas of his game. Didn't do a huge amount in Summer League, went 10 and 5.5, and you know, blocked 0.8 shots a game in his 24 minutes. Nothing too spectacular, but still 52 and 86% shooting percentages. That's something that does you know, give him hope for the future to be able to do something. So not a bad pick. The Michinau one, well, Michinau's not even coming over this season, but
yeah,
not sure we ever really see him do anything. Now, we've touched on free agency already, DJ, the guys they brought in, veteran minimum types, Allen Anderson, Maurice Spates, Brandon Bass. We've touched on all three of those guys so far. The other one they brought across was Ray Felton.
Yeah.
Who had somewhat, honestly, the Ray Felton resurgence last season was one of the top five surprises to me in the NBA, given that the season before, Rick Carlisle just said, you know what, mate, you're just not going to play. We're just not going to play you at all. Even when Felton was coming back from his firearm suspension, and he had an ankle injury at the same time, which was getting better, Carlisle wouldn't say, all right, let's declare him healthy so he can sit out his 5-game suspension. He just said, nah, he's just not. He just refused to even sit him on the bench as the 12th man so that he could actually get his suspension to run down, and then he'd be active. He just refused to play him. And then something happened. In the playoffs, he took over from Rajon Rondo, put up big numbers. And then last season, he was a revelation. Where does he fit in? He surely slides behind Austin Rivers as the third point guard on this team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's actually a pretty good fit just because I don't know how comfortable I am with Austin Rivers' backup point guard just running the team. I know Jamal Crawford kind of split those duties, and it's a lot of ISO ball. So I think it's good to get a point guard who can at least run some pick and roll and distribute a little bit. And yeah, he was really good for Dallas last year, like you said, especially during the first half of the season. I mean, he looked like not quite the Ray Felton of all, but pretty close to it. So I think it's a good pickup on the minimum. That's one thing. We've given Doc a lot of flack so far, but that's one thing he does really well, is fill out the end of the bench with veteran minimum guys who are really good, talented players that, in case of emergency, if people go down and get hurt, these guys can fill in and you won't lose as much as you would on other teams. And maybe it's the LA factor, or maybe we should give that credit to Doc, but this was a pretty nice little offseason given that the Clippers had nothing to work with. It would be nice to one day draft a young small forward who can defend and potentially be a 3-and-D guy, because the Clippers haven't had one of those in forever.
Felton also had one of the season's most surprising triple-doubles last season, if you don't remember that. He had a 10-point, 11-rebound, 11-assist game back in December, which, safe to say, that won't happen again. But he's a guy that can rack up stats if, for some reason, you know, Paul is out and they prefer to keep Rivers in a 20-minute bench role and they start Felton. He will put up stats, and we've seen that in his time in New York especially. But last season in Dallas, he was decent. He wasn't great in Portland, but he was pretty good when he was in Charlotte as well at racking up those stats. It's all about opportunity. And at the moment, that opportunity is suppressed because he's sitting behind Rivers. And you mentioned Crawford as well. He's an emergency guy, but probably the best third point guard in the NBA, I'd say.
I would say so too.
The guys they lost, nothing too exciting there. Jeff Green, Paolo Prigioni. Cole Aldrich is a big loss because he was key for this team last season. And I know he's not going to be contributing to this team, but I just want to get your take on what Aldrich did last season, because he is one of my favourite players in the NBA because of what he was able to do. And he was tremendous down the stretch. And it's a big loss for the Clippers to go from Aldrich to Spates, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, as a pick-and-roll partner, he really kind of solidified things in that second unit. And he was the perfect guy with that bench, just because if you have Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford and those kind of guys, you need the grinders who are going to set big, nasty screens and hit the offensive glass hard and just kind of be garbage guys and hold it down defensively in the paint, and Aldridge did all those things. Spates is more like a giant Jamal Crawford, right? Like, he just wants to get his shots up, so I don't know how a bench that features Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, and Maurice Spates is going to gel. It'll be interesting to see. It's a lot of guys, a lot of talented offensive players, but there's only one basketball on the court at a time.
Spates is going to be a guy that, if he's pushed into a 20-minute role, he'll be an interesting guy for fantasy, because you might stream him in, he might give you 14 points in 18 minutes. And
that's absolutely
something we've seen him do throughout his time at the Warriors. He'll come in and just all of a sudden have a 60% shooting night and put up, you know, 20 shots in 15 minutes, and you go, where's this coming from? But that's just what he does. But the point you make is good about Rivers and Crawford also being in that unit, which might, you know, when he was playing with the Warriors, he was playing with guys like Sean Livingston and Brandon Rush, guys who didn't jack as many shots and didn't want the ball in their hands as often. So
right,
it's a little bit different. So whether he adjusts to that and whether he's able to provide that sort of, you know, quick scoring in low minutes, which is useful in fantasy, it remains to be seen how he fits into that situation. So we'll see how that goes. This is a tough one, DJ. Breakout candidate. Is there anyone? Because we sort of know who everyone is at this point.
Right. Everyone's kind of an established entity. We've kind of seen what everyone on this roster has done in the past. I guess the one guy you could look at is Austin Rivers, but I'm not picking Austin Rivers for that because I still think he has a long way to go before he's a relevant fantasy player, just because his percentages are so poor. So I would say breakout player, maybe this is silly. What about Blake Griffin taking another leap? If he adds a three-point shot to his arsenal, and he has the range to do it, and we've seen it in limited attempts, he just got to step back 1 or 2 feet, and he's shooting threes all of a sudden. So I could see that being a little wrinkle that Blake's added to his game. He always adds something new every offseason. I could see him extending his range a little bit and becoming maybe not a big-time three-point shooter, but a somewhat useful one who won't, you know, who will give you a little something in that category for once.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that happening. And the point that you touched on there about him always adding something is key. He didn't come into the league as a good ball handler and passer, well, not the same level he is now, but he's a guy that will get you 5 assists a game now as the secondary ball handler on this team.
Yep.
He didn't come in as a good free throw shooter, but now you're going to get mid-70% from him. He couldn't really hit mid-range shots. It was all dunks and oops and all that sort of stuff. Putbacks, that's all it was from him. But now he can step out, and I agree that he will be able to take threes. He might be a guy that, you know, ceiling hits 50 threes a season, but that's still pretty decent. They're talking half a three a game there.
Right.
And doing it efficiently, you know, giving you 50% from the field, giving you 75% from the line, giving you potentially 35% from three. Five assists, nine rebounds is sort of where he can get to as well. I like it because he does get the bit undervalued because people go, he doesn't block any shots. And I say this all the time, DJ, that's great. He doesn't block any shots. I know he's a big man, but which other big man gives you 5.5 assists?
Right.
The answer's LeBron and Draymond. Like, that's it, really. Like, no one else does that. And that puts him in a, yeah, look, he doesn't block two shots a game, but the guys that block two shots a game or three shots a game, like Hassan Whiteside, give you 0.7 assists.
So right.
Which one's more valuable? It depends on how you want to do it. But the injury risk is a concern for me with Blake, but I think that in the second round or the third round, and you probably don't have to go in the second round, he'll probably be available in the third round. I'm all for it. You know, a guy that could go 22-9-5.5 with a steal a game on those good percentages, and then the ability to maybe hit threes, it's pretty tough to go past. And I think I've never really had Blake on many of my fantasy teams because in general he tended to be overvalued.
Mm-hmm.
But I reckon the pendulum sort of swung. Are you sort of getting that feeling with Blake that the pendulum sort of swinging against him and people are sort of undervaluing him now?
I think so, yeah. And it always kind of happens right around this time of someone's careers where now he's, you know, 28, 29. Now you're thinking, okay, he doesn't have the same potential that he does as a 24-year-old pick, right? Even though he continues to add things to his game, you see that age and you think, okay, he is what he is now. And I just don't think that's ever really been the case with Blake. And like you said, the blocks, yeah, he doesn't block shots. We know that about him. He's not going to start blocking shots anytime soon. But you can address that elsewhere. He doesn't hurt you in any category except for that now, now that he's a good free throw shooter. So, yeah, I'd be perfectly fine with him in the third round of fantasy drafts. It reminds me of when Carmelo Anthony would, you know, be a first round pick. Blake right now is going to get you better numbers than prime Carmelo would.
Hey, look, you can't look. Getting 20 points a game is huge. Not many people do that. And then all those other stats, he's going to be... Look, you have to be willing to assume some risk with the injury, definitely.
Yeah.
And the fact that he just continues to have some weird things happen to him.
Right.
But at some point, that luck changes. Like, it doesn't... It's not just going to continually happen unless your name's Terrence Jones. Because it just doesn't. Like, this weird stuff just doesn't continually happen. Yeah, it's happened a couple of times. But I'm pretty into Blake this season. I think that he will come at a discount, and it's going to make him a real... I think I had an opportunity to pick him at pick 40 in one draft, and then someone grabbed him at pick 39. So I was right there. That's pretty low for Blake. I'll have to grab him if he gets to me, and then he went the one spot before.
Every Clippers fan that's listening just winced when you said, this weird stuff just can't continue to happen.
Yeah, well, let's hope.
They said, oh, that's just been the story of the last, what, 30 years?
That's true. I'm not trying to jinx anything any further, but you just feel it's something, and I feel the same way about, like, even Anthony Davis, that eventually it just has to not happen. And again, Terrence Jones is the king of this stuff. Like, he missed games with injuries I'd never even heard of, like lacerated eyelids and stuff that just makes no sense as a basketball player. And eventually you feel like it has to turn. And Blake, maybe it's his turn this year. Another guy that I would consider as a breakout, DJ, and we've hit, Doc loves talking DeAndre Jordan up. He loves saying he's elevating himself. He's a superstar. Yeah, Doc was a year ahead of telling everyone that he was a good defensive player when he was just a good rebounder. But now he's actually a good defender, and he's in one of the top defensive centers in the game, and he's saying, oh, he's going to add more offensively. You think that's real?
You know, I want it to be for DeAndre, because I think with more touches, he could really do a lot. He could really do a lot offensively. I think he's a much better post-scorer than he gets credit for. He just never really gets the opportunity. So I think Doc is kind of talking him up, because that's what Doc always does. And I won't believe it until I see them make it a consistent habit to go to DeAndre and to get him these looks. So I'm not completely sold. I could see a little bit of an uptick in scoring, but I just don't see them giving him enough touches. Just because, again, there's not enough to go around with the Clippers.
With DeAndre, you're obviously not going to draft him thinking you're getting 20 points a game. He's going to give you a little bit below average in scoring, but what you do draft him for is elite rebounding. You draft him for elite block numbers, and elite field goal percentage. Like, he's a 70% field goal shooter. He's that far above everyone else in that category that he can make up for. You know, you could have three Ricky Rubios on your team, and you would still come out above average if you had DeAndre Jordan with him. Now, on the other side of things, his free throw percentage is abominable. It is horrible. He took more free throw attempts last season than he did field goal attempts, which is almost, it's unheard of, basically. So, like I said on the Pistons podcast with Andre Drummond, if you take DeAndre Jordan, I don't care what you say, you're punting free throws. You cannot win that category. You need to have four James Hardens to even break even. That's how poor it is, and the volume is just so significantly bad that you literally cannot come back from that. So in a rotisserie league, forget about it. In a head-to-head league, I don't care if he slides to pick 100. If you pick him there, you've just lost the category, and that's completely fine. You just need to make sure you've done everything with that in mind, and you shouldn't really just grab him because, he's slid, because that might just blow everything up that you've done. In saying that, to get massive contributions in three categories, not many players do that. Like, Steph does it. Harden does it. There's not... DeAndre's a top... If you take free throw percentage out as a category, he's a top 10 player.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how impactful he is with all those things. And then if there's potential scoring upside, if he gets to, say, even 15 points a game, that's another thing that you can just add to it. He's never going to hit threes. He's never going to be a distributor, but he could get a steal a game. He could get you 2.5 blocks a game. He's 70%, 15 rebounds, 15 points. These are really, really good numbers. So don't be scared off going the punt free throw route with him. But if you're not willing to, just leave him go. And if he ends up going, at pick 100, just leave it, because you might have ruined everything that you built up.
So be it, right? You can't spoil the rest of your roster. You got to have a plan. You got to have like a list of targets going into your draft. If you're planning on drafting Drummond or Jordan, you have to have a whole list ready to go of poor free throw shooting guards, the Rajon Rondos of the world, because you're punting.
Yep, you are. People say, "Oh, I don't punt, but I drafted John Ray Jordan." Sorry, well, you
do, yeah, right. Right.
There's no two ways around it. You literally cannot recover from it. And again, that's fine. I have no issue with doing that. Now, let's talk Chris Paul, the other of the big three on this team. He started off last season slowly, but when Blake Griffin went down, he took his game up a level. He saw his assist numbers rise in the second half. He saw his rebounding numbers rise because he was taking on a bigger load without Griffin there. But still, he only played 32 minutes a night. He's heading to that area where they're going to be starting to look... Well, I think they've already started to look to sort of manage his minutes. And that's, I guess, somewhat of a concern from a fantasy point of view. If in a situation where Blake missed the entire second half, he still didn't get big minutes, that he's not going to come back to getting 34 a night. Do you think that's probably a fair thing to say about how they look to use Paul moving forward?
Yeah, I think everyone is kind of waiting for Chris Paul to fall off a little bit, and it's not really happening. And I think he's smart enough, and the way that he plays, the style of play that he plays with, he can survive like this. He can keep going on like this. I think his minutes may drop a tiny bit. Last year he went from, in 2014-2015, he was 34.8 minutes a game. 2015, 2016, 32.7. I can see him hovering again right around that 32-minute mark. Don't overlook him in your draft. I have a hard time seeing him fall off skill-wise. Everything that he does isn't really reliant on speed or athleticism at this point in his career. At age 31, he's still got a lot left in the tank, in my mind.
What you're going to get from him, you're going to get top three in the league in assist numbers. You're going to get really high steal numbers, probably over 2 a game. Super efficient shooting from the field and from the line. He's not going to give you 20 points a game, and a lot of the other first rounders will, but that can be a situation where you can exploit that. Maybe you don't concentrate on high scoring players and get other players, like a Chris Paul Hassan Whiteside combination, where you're not looking at high scoring, but you're going to get big assists, big rebounds, big steals, big blocks, big field goal percentage, big free throw percentage. And that can be a way to do it without looking at that points category. So the back end of the first round of drafts is really, really close. Between pick 6 and 13, those guys are extraordinarily close. So I could see Paul going anywhere from 5 or 6 to falling outside the first round, as I've seen it. And if you're at pick 12 and Chris Paul falls to you, it is just, it's stupidly good value to get a guy like that.
Yeah.
At that point, you just got to know how to use it and build with it, like with any player. But he's going to fall in some slots. He'll go at 7 in some. He'll go at 10. He'll go at 12. He'll go at 13. That's, you've got to be aware that you're, if you're picking at 11 or 12 or even 10 in a draft, that sort of range, you're going to get someone really, really good fall to you because those players are so close to each other. And Paul is a guy that often falls and then will end up being a top 5 player by the season's end.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the tricky part is that everyone sees the point guard position and sees, you know, all the depth and thinks, okay, I want to take a different position at this and I'll nab a really good point guard late. And while there is some validity to that, you're looking at a guy who can easily lead the league in assists and steals every single year. He's done it multiple times before. So it's really tough to pass on him in the first round, in my mind, in the late first round. I wouldn't let him fall to the second.
We did a podcast on point guards the other day, and you mentioned the depth, and that's absolutely true. But if you don't get them, they're gone. You will have 15 of them go inside the top 50 players. I think a league we did the other day had 20 point guards go in the first 60 picks. So there was one run in the fourth round where out of 10 picks, 9 of them were point guards. So you might say, oh, wait. But then if you wait, they're gone. And you can't go into a league and hope to be competitive in assists with only one point guard. You need to get 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Decent point guard, so you pretty much have to get one in the first or second, and one in the third, and one in the fourth, and then grab maybe another one in the eighth or ninth round, because these middle range point, especially when they all start flying off the board, when Conley goes, and then Dragic goes, and then Schroeder, Russell, Lynn, Reggie Jackson, all these guys just start flying off in that middle tier of players, and yeah, the depth is there, but it's gone. It's gone before you can even blink, really. So you do need to, and that gives Paul some extra value because his assists are all better than all those guys, and you mentioned leading the league in assists and steals and doing it really efficiently in both percentage categories. He's right up there, and you need to get your hands on a point guard early, and he's one of those guys, so definitely someone to look at in that situation. JJ Redick, he's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. That goes without saying. Again, super efficient from the field, from the free throw line. You're going to get probably 45% of his three-pointers. So if your league counts three-point percentage, he jumps up significantly in value. But in minutes-wise, Doc doesn't like using him in big minutes, does he? He only played 28 a game last season, I believe.
Yeah, Doc doesn't like playing him a lot, and I think a lot of it has to do with health. He's had issues with his back over the last few years, and he's one of the guys that Doc really kind of wants to put on ice until the playoffs, and then he can play him bigger minutes. And Jamal Crawford, when he's hot, Doc has a tendency to ride the hot hand and go with Jamal when he's, you know, in one of his games through one of his hot streaks. So JJ had a great year last year, maybe the best year of his career. I wouldn't count on that happening again, and I think you may be paying for last year's production a little bit if you take JJ in your fantasy draft, and the injury issues and the age. I think if there's any player on the Clippers, Paul Pierce excluded, to take a step back, it's probably JJ.
Yeah, I'm with you a little bit on Redick. He's ADP is only 92, so it's not high, but I still don't think he's going to crack the top 100 as a player this year. Yeah, he gets you a lot of threes, he does it really efficiently, but you get no rebounding numbers, you get no assists, you get poor steal numbers, you don't get block shots, and his scoring might come down a little bit. He's not a great scorer as it is. He's a great shooter, but he only gave you 16 points a game, which is marginally above average, and still useful, but he's not going to be for everyone, and to me, he's a guy around that 100 mark, and someone will probably reach earlier because he's going to hit a lot of threes, and he'll probably hit 2.5 threes a game. But as you mentioned, there are concerns. The backs are concerned. The minutes aren't going up. They're going to be below 30 most likely. So he's a bit of a concern in that sort of situation. Now, we've touched on Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers a couple of times. What did you make of Austin Rivers' season last season?
I thought he was better, especially on the defensive end. He's playing with effort. He's playing with energy. He's had some nights where he can show, when his jumper is falling, he can score. He can score a little bit, and, that makes you open your eyes a little bit in fantasy. But he's just too inconsistent for me. He can go, 7 for 11 one night and look great and look like a real NBA player. And then he'll go a whole week without really making a shot, and he's throwing up crazy floaters and forcing the action, and just, I, the the swings with Austin Rivers, it's really hard to predict when you're going to get a good game from him. I could see in DFS maybe you taking a chance on him because he is one of those guys that can just randomly drop 20, as we've seen. But in season-long leagues, I'm staying away.
What do you make of his 42% three-point shooting after the break last season?
I didn't know that's a fun stat. I didn't know he was shooting 42% after the break. That's pretty solid. I don't know if that's sustainable. I just don't think he's a plus 40% three-point shooter. I could see him falling around 34-35% pretty easily, though.
Yeah, we've got him projected at 35%. He shot 33.5% last season. But that, you know, the last 3 months of the year, so basically all of 2016, he shot 39% from three. So it wasn't just a tiny sample. We're talking 30-plus games here that he shot over 38%. So it's pretty significant. And any time, really, when Chris Paul has been out, we saw what he did in the playoffs, like really gutsy performances, which I think bought him a lot of, not sympathy, but people were like, you know what, maybe Rivers isn't terrible in the playoffs with some of those gutsy performances. And even the season before in the playoffs when he had to start in those games against Houston when Paul was out, he puts up stats. And in the DFS, in those situations, he's an absolute must-own because his salary's low and he's always someone I'll look to add. But his overall production, he doesn't get many assists. He's not a big rebounder. He's decent at getting steals. He'll score. He'll hit some threes. And if that efficiency keeps up and he can continue to hit 44% from the field, which he did last season, and maybe even increase it, it's a real thing that he can start to build on. The Clippers obviously invested in him heavily. And I think that he's going to be the guy that if Paul misses time, and Paul may miss some time, that he'll be someone that I look to. But otherwise, his game's not overly fantasy-friendly. He's more just going to rack up stats through pure volume rather than an innate ability to get them easily.
Yeah, I think if Chris Paul goes down, that's when you're interested and that's when you look into it. Unless you're in a deep league, though, I'm not taking him on my bench. I just think there's other players that, bigger upside that I would rather have.
What do you make of Jamal Crawford? Now, he won the Sixth Man of the Year award last season. I've been on record saying I did not think that he deserved that award.
Yep.
You're a person who watched the Clippers. I watched them a lot, but you watched them more than I did. Is that fair, or do you think that I'm being overly harsh on someone who literally was a sieve?
No, that's 100% fair. He was very average by his career standards. This was, his shooting percentages were really bad. It's just voters look at who's scoring the most points off the bench, and a lot of times that's Jamal. And even though he's not a good defender and doesn't really do anything but score, he's going to get those votes. It's not exactly fair. I'd like to think, anyway, that if Andre Iguodala and Manu Ginobili would have stayed healthy, they would have won Sixth Man of the Year last year, but it just didn't happen. So Jamal was kind of the default choice for voters, I guess.
He's a guy that, we talked about his defense, but he's also a guy that doesn't create for others as well. So for fantasy, you might look at Jamal and go, you know what, he's going to score. But even when he scores, he's scoring 12 a game or 13 a game. He's not scoring big volumes. He hits threes, he does it inefficiently, he really hurts your field goal percentage if he's getting enough minutes to be useful. He's a good free throw shooter, doesn't get to the line very often, so it's not a big impact there. Anemic assist and rebound numbers, and he just doesn't, look, he's not someone who should be drafted in leagues. His current draft position is 129, I wouldn't be wasting a spot there. I can actually see his minutes coming down a little bit this, because how old is he now, 58?
Roughly.
He's not going to be able to, he still plays, but and he keeps himself in tremendous shape. He looks like he's 22, yeah, but he's not. So, that they keep his minutes lower last season. And again, he took on a bigger role when Griffin was down as more of a scorer. And that's just, I just don't think they're going to run it that way this season. They do have an option where they can get Felton in there to play some of those minutes too and preserve Crawford a little bit more. He's just not someone that I think has really any interest to me in any sort of fantasy league. Well, that's not true. If it's a league that's going 16 teams deep, I'll be interested. But his negatives are pretty significant, and the positives are concentrated in like one or two categories, and even then they're not all that exciting to me.
Yep, I agree.
And that's pretty much all of this team. I think no one else. No, that's it. That is the roster.
We've covered the roster.
All 15 guys. There's nothing. You can't see the Clippers making any sort of bringing anyone in, and there's no one in danger of losing a roster spot, is there?
No, I wouldn't think so. I think the only guy that maybe that we talked about that might not make the roster is Alan Anderson, just because of those health issues you mentioned, and maybe they want to open up a roster spot for somebody else.
Yeah, that's true. And Paul Pierce might not play, so there might be that roster spot that opens up, and Doc looks to bring in another minimum price veteran to come in and fill that spot. But that's the only change. It's not going to have any real impact on anything fantasy-wise. Look, if they can swing a trade, as you mentioned, for a PJ Tucker or Wilson Chandler mid-season, then that's really good for them, and those guys can be really significant. Yeah, not really significant, but top 150 fantasy contributors, at least better than Mahmoud Say and what Wes Johnson can be. So that would be an interesting situation for the Clippers. It would help them out a lot as well. But it's something that we can look forward to in January or February if they decide to swing a move like that. Actually, before we go, DJ, bold prediction. What is it?
You're going to laugh at this one, I think.
Okay.
I was going to go one direction. I'm going to go in a different direction, though. The Clippers will sign Ray Allen at some point this season.
Yeah, I like it. Obviously, there's the Doc Rivers connection there. Imagine Ray Allen and Jamal Crawford in the same, the two fittest 40-year-olds in the league. not that Jamal's 40, but he's pretty close. He's 37, I think, Crawford.
Yeah, I think he's 36.
Okay, so I'm sure changing him a year there. But those two guys, they'll probably outrun everyone on the team.
Yeah, it's crazy how good a shape they've stayed in, and from everything I've heard about Ray. People are saying he wants to come back. Doc was saying the other day in an article that he's in fantastic shape, that he has no doubts that he could still go out and play and hang fitness level-wise. I could just see it. I think if a 40-year-old is going to come back to the NBA, he probably wants to be somewhere warm like Los Angeles. You got the Doc Rivers connection. Maybe he wants another ring. The Clippers are going to be in the mix for it. If something happens with J.J. Redick, who we discussed has had back issues, the Clippers are looking for a shooter. I don't know. I could just see it happening. That's my bold prediction.
I like it. I reckon there's a fairly decent chance of that actually coming true, DJ. That's a really I never really thought of Allen heading there, but it's definitely on the card. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Is that not bold enough, Josh?
No.
Do you think I should say the Clippers will win the NBA championship?
You can say that if you want. I think it's bold enough that I didn't even think of it as being a possibility. So, but now that I think about it, it makes total sense.
It could
sense.
Be, yeah. Who knows?
I'm on board with Ray Allen with the Clippers. All right, DJ, thank you again. And let's remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter.
Yep, I am at Fox Sports Foster on Twitter.
And of course, they can find your stuff on Fox Sports. You've got anything interesting coming out or recently out over there?
So I'm fighting the good fight at Fox Sports, trying to get our fantasy basketball coverage ramped up. So we'll see. I'm a fantasy analyst for them, so we're doing all fantasy football right now. So my feed will be covered with that. But yeah, check that out, and Locked On Clippers as well. Hopefully, we get some little cross listener action here.
Yeah, definitely check out Locked On Clippers and give it a review on iTunes, 5 stars. Give it for this show as well. We're closing on 600 reviews for this show, which we probably have passed by the time you're listening to this. But thank you to everyone who has taken the time out to do that. It's been sensational. And if you've got a spare, it takes legitimately a minute to do it. Spend 2 minutes reviewing this show, or one reviewing this show, one reviewing Locked On Clippers, and help grow the podcast and get it out to more people. Because DJ, as you would know, the more people that listen to a podcast, the better you can make the podcast through advertising dollars and get out to more people, improve the quality, improve the information, improve the guests, improve everything. And that's where all you listeners come in being able to help out in that sort of way. So thank you to everyone who's done that so far. DJ, thank you for spending the time with me and coming on and talking about the Clippers.
Yep, thanks, Josh. Appreciate you having me. This is fun.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Josh Lloyd. Make sure you check out all his work. He's doing great stuff. If you play fantasy basketball, he's a must listen, must add on Twitter. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Once again, this is the Locked On Clippers podcast brought to you by SeatGeek. We will be back soon. Thanks for listening.
I'll hit the game winner. are you the game winner? Baby, believe in me. I'll hit the game winner. Baby, believe in me.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.